Family. We strive to glorify God through nurturing, equipping, and nurturing family members for the purpose of bringing all to honor God in their respective roles. This is our last week working through the core values, so this is obviously our last core value. Kurt was not wrong by saying that family is also a spiritual family. However, today I will be focusing a bit on, I'll be focusing pretty much exclusively on the biological family. And part of that is because if you look back at our definition of fellowship, I actually purposefully, or I wrote it, but we, as the lead team and the pastors and deacons and everybody, we all decided to include the word family in the definition of that core value because fellowship emphasizes the spiritual family that we all are. And we are all to view this body as a family and treat each other as such. Now, we talked about when we did the time on fellowship, how family doesn't always necessarily conjure up good ideas to all of us. So we need to look to the word and what God's heart is towards family and what families are called to. And that's how we will push each other towards a good and fruitful spiritual family. Today, however, we're going to be looking at biological family. And if you read through our core values, you read through the first four, teaching, fellowship, outreach, prayer. We could stop there. Because I would argue that those four effectively summarize anything and everything that we do here as a church. So in a way, to draw out family, specifically biological family, it seems a bit redundant. So why would we do that? We have purposely chosen to single out family. Now, there are many, many things that we could have singled out from those four. But one that we've chosen, and we may very well add core values later, but we've specifically chosen family because we believe it is that important and that needed today. Think about the state of the family in America and in the world. As I prepped this sermon, I spent some time and was very drawn towards listing off a bunch of statistics about the state of the family, trends of the family, different things like that in America. But honestly, I don't think we need that. I think we're all very aware of what is happening to specifically the biological nuclear family in America. The data is not good. It's not encouraging. It's not trending in ways we'd want it to. And I'll just leave it at that. If you're curious, I can talk to you about that stuff later. I can point you to articles and stuff like that. But I think we're all aware of that enough that I don't need to sit here and rattle off a bunch of facts. We live in a world of increasingly broken families. Marriages are suffering. Parenting is all over the place. If you read about parenting advice and methodology, even in Christian spheres, we live in a world that also increasingly values family, biological family, less and less. And in a world that can't even really define anymore what biological family is beyond simply who you choose to have in your household. Family is what you make it at this point in America. We want our church to be a place of healing and of valuing, equipping, and encouraging all family members to fulfill and thrive in the role that God has placed them in, wherever they are. And wording the core value this way does not mean that we cater specifically to intact, stable families that fit the biblical mold. We are well aware of the fact that even within our church, that is not always the case. That's the world we live in. We live in a fallen world with people who are struggling and are suffering. We all have pasts. So wherever you find yourself, as far as your family is concerned, we want to meet you where you are and help you. So as we think about what the family is and how our church can help, I want to kind of walk through a series of questions real quick. The first one is simply, what is a family? We talked about this a lot in ethics. So I'm not going to rehash everything I went over. If you want to listen to some of those stuff, some of those ethics lectures, they're all online. I also specifically did a block of Sunday school, I think early last year. I called it the spiritual family, and we talked through a lot of the stats that I was tempted to bring up again today and talked about the state of the family in America and everything like that. I think those are also online. If not, I can talk to you about that if you want to. But the biblical ideal is what we just read in our Bible reading. It's one man, one woman for life. May or may not have children. But again, we are well aware of the fact that it's not even almost the norm in today's culture. There is the reality around us that, again, many broken, suffering families. And one thing I also want to point out is that this doesn't exclude singles from the ministry of this church. That is why we talked about the church as a family and our core value of fellowship. Because focusing on families does not mean that we intend to ignore or neglect singles. It's just families are part of what our church focuses on. So I don't think I need to, I think we all know what kind of the biblical understanding of the family is. We've talked about a lot of that stuff throughout previous sermons and Sunday school times. What I want to focus on more is what is the family called to? And I want to look first to Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 to 9. Deuteronomy chapter 6, most of us know pretty well as the Shema section, the love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. I want to start in verse 4 and keep going. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." I think what's interesting about kind of the stereotypical talk about the Shema is that we don't go to the next few verses. Because love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength is not just talking about the individual. It's also talking about the family and about what families are to look like. And as you look through these verses, it says, love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, and all your might. And it also says, these words that I command you, teach them diligently to your children and talk of them when you sit down, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. In other words, if you are awake. In fact, if you're lying down and resting, you should still probably be teaching these in some way. Now, that doesn't obviously mean that like every single second of your family time is some sort of lecture or something like that, but it means that the environment of your home is one where learning about God and learning to obey him and live for him and glorify him is what characterizes every aspect of your life as a family. And then it talks about you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they should be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Now, the Pharisees were really good about taking these literally. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing to take these literally and have Bible verses everywhere. I mean, there's like the stereotypical, like you walk in the door and there's like the, as for me and my house, we shall serve the Lord. Like that's not a bad thing to have that in your house as a sign somewhere. I grew up with that in my house. But I think the bigger thing is the reality behind it. Does that match? Like it's one thing to have all of these fancy artsy signs and stuff in your house, but are those actually the characteristics of your house? Because I would argue that this verse is not saying to put them on your hand and between your eyes and on your doorposts for the sake of the physical reality of that. It's talking more about the spiritual reality, that these things ought to characterize everything you do. And if you think about it kind of in a symbolic way, okay, hands and between your eyes. Your hands symbolize everything you do. And between your eyes, your brain, symbolizes everything you think. So everything you do, everything you think and say ought to be along the lines of honoring God. And then the doorpost of your house and on your gates is essentially talking about you purposely make your house an environment of worship to God through whatever mediums are appropriate to your family, your setting, your means. So I wanted to spend some time first there to show that from, I mean, you can go all the way back to Genesis, but like from here as kind of like the part of, this is the second giving of the law before the Israelites go into the land. And Moses is saying, okay, love the Lord your God with everything. And families, specifically parents, create environments in your home and teach your children these things in every avenue, every way, every context, everything you can think of. That is what families, specifically parents in this context, are called to. And then another passage, Ephesians 5, what we read, Ephesians 5, verses 15 to 6:4. How many of you were thrown off that I started at 5:15 rather than at 5:22? Was anybody kind of confused by that? Or did anybody even notice? I feel like the Bible reading time is kind of like, okay, somebody stands up and read. All right, cool. Now it's sermon time. Matt was kind of thrown off, I guess. Oh, sorry. Oh, no, you can talk. What? Yep. Love it. Yeah, for the sake of recording, Matt said that at their wedding, they had that context read as well. I think it's really cool. I did that on purpose because I think just like with the Shema, how we don't read forward, I think it is detrimental that with the text about the husbands and the wives and the children, we don't read backwards because context is so important in understanding what you're actually reading. So I purposely started in verse 15, and you could even go farther back. Obviously, the context is the entire book of Ephesians. I'm not going to read it all right now. You can do that on your own later. But starting in 15, look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit. And then he goes on to some characteristics of being filled with the Spirit, which are addressing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, and submitting one another out of reverence for Christ. And then goes on from there. I would argue that the sections here to the family are part of being filled with the Spirit. And I want to pause here before I go into talking to husbands and wives and children and parents. I'm sure everybody here is well aware of the fact that Regan and I read a ton. We have each read probably dozens of books on marriage and parenting and everything. What is frustrating to me a lot of times is that a lot of the books are like, this is the methodology that you do. Like, you have to do it this way. All other ways are wrong, or all other ways are like incomplete or whatever. I'm like, they all say that. Like, okay, you all can't be the best way. What's interesting to me is if you really break down the core, like, of the good parts of the books, what's ironic is that being a good husband, being a good wife, being a good child, being a good parent. I mean, let's key on parenting. How many of you have been to, like, the parenting section of a bookstore? It's giant. We live in a world flooded with how-tos of parenting. And that's probably, if you talk to any parent as they're becoming a parent, that's probably one of the most discouraging things is they're like, how do I know how to do it right? There are just so many different methods and so many different thought lines. And everybody's got all this, these stories and all these different types of advice. And everybody's got this program to follow and this methodology to follow. What's interesting, though, is if you take all of the good from all of the different things, they honestly all boil down to being a good Christian. If you want to be a good husband, wife, child, parent, follow the Bible. Do what God says. Be a good Christian. That's like, it's a shocker. Now, who saw that coming? Because the thing is, if, like, say, parenting, so many of the things in parenting books that books rail against is anger, lack of repenting to your children, lack of patience, lack of love and gentleness, and, oh, wait, am I starting to list the fruit of the Spirit? Huh. Weird. So it's amazing how for the longest time you didn't have this plethora of books. You had parents who just parented and went to the church for help and talked to pastors and talked to fellow Christians. And now all of a sudden we need all these how-to books. Now, I'm not saying books are bad. Regan and I love books. I love a good book. I'll read a good book on pretty much anything. But we can't do so while forgetting that the Bible is our best book about how to parent, how to be a partner in a marriage, how to relate to anybody. So that was all free. I'm going to keep going back to the reading here. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives submit in everything to their husbands. Man, that's an uncomfortable paragraph to read nowadays. What I like, though, is that the next paragraph to husbands is like twice as long to make sure that nobody misunderstands what just happened there. Because you talk, wives submit to your husbands as basically as the church submits to Christ. And now obviously like, okay, well, that's going to be abused. And then the very next sentence, husband, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. There's no room for husbands like going overboard with, okay, you're supposed to submit to me. It's like, oh, wait, you're called to lead as Christ led, which by the way, he gave up his life for the church. And then it goes on and it says that he did this that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it just as Christ does the church, because we are members of the body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. What the husband is being called to here, is self-sacrificial leadership for the sake of spiritually leading his wife, and you extend it, spiritually leading his family. And then the wife, as the husband is doing this, follows that leadership. And it's supposed to represent how Christ leads the church. Now, obviously, you can argue all sorts of things about, okay, like, what if it's not being done well and everything like that? Like, okay, it's not saying, like, just overbearing leadership and blind submission. Like, it's, if you take it that way, you haven't read any of the rest of Scripture. Like, they're each pushing each other towards Christ. The husband, due to the created order and how God has called families to be structured, is supposed to be leading, but leading in a self-sacrificial way. And wives are supposed to be submitting to this leadership and helping the husband to be a better leader and encouraging him along the way. So there's mutual give and take as they're helping each other fulfill their roles. That's all I'm going to say there. It's obviously a loaded topic with a lot of stuff. Caleb and I have talked about it. He's talked about it in 1 Corinthians. We've talked about it in ethics classes. If you want to talk about that more, we can do that more offline. But that's kind of the picture there of the husband and the wife. And then it goes on, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. I love how the immediate response to the next group is like a response to a potential abuse from the group that he just talked about. Like, the children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in this land. How many of you grew up with a father that said, that reminded you of this and said, oh, by the way, if you don't obey me, you're not going to live long in this land? I may not have worded it that way, but like, that's kind of the impression that you got. The immediate next verse is, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. In other words, like, this isn't something you do by force. You lead. And if any of you have seen any of the good pictures and the good articles going around about leadership, leadership is not with a whip from behind. Leadership is leading from the front and setting the example and drawing people behind you as you push towards a common goal. Now, obviously, as a parent, especially with young kids, there are some times where you're more forcibly pushing them because there's a lot of things you're fighting against. But I appreciate that the very next thing is, Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So what you see here is you see a picture of the husband as the head of the home and the wife submitting to him and helping him in this role. And then you see children obeying and parents leading and bringing their children up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord without provoking them to anger. So that is what families are called to. So what is the goal of family ministry in our church? As we read before, the goal is nurturing, equipping, and maturing family members for the purpose of bringing all to honor God in their respective roles. In other words, we in this church, our goal is to help each family member in whatever role they find themselves to live out the biblical picture of what they are called to. And then how do we plan to accomplish that goal? This is where a phrase that you probably heard a few times that some of us may not fully still understand. In fact, it's a hybrid of two things, so nobody really ever understands what it means because it's not technically any one specific thing. But we, anyways, say that our church, as far as our family ministry model goes, we are family equipping for the purpose of family integrated. And some of you may never have heard those words, so I'm going to break down what that means. We firmly believe that it is the best to keep the family, both biological and spiritual, together as much as possible. But we also recognize that age-appropriate instruction is important and that age-segregated activities can be a valuable part of the church's calendar. Kind of a little bit of background about the two terms. Family equipping for the purpose of family integrated. Family equipping, what that church model does is you have all sorts of segmentation that happens. And like basically things are broken out by age. So you have like the children's church, the youth group, young adults, everything like that's all broken up. But the family equipping comes in where all of those groups are supposed to be working together and funneling towards like common teaching. They have curriculum that are like passed between groups and parents are supposed to be checking in with kids about what they're learning and stuff like that. There are a lot of strengths to that model. And then family integrated in its extreme form, family integrated is literally everything the church does is totally together. There's no nursery, no children's church, no anything. That's the extreme form. There are some modifications of both of the forms. But what we've kind of settled on as a church is a hybrid of the two. That's why right now, currently, we have children's church going on. So we are not truly family integrated. However, we also have babies that are present. We have young children that are present. So we are not truly family equipping. We are both. And we do that on purpose. Because big part of the reason that we recognize that there is a lot of value and assistance specifically to parents to have specific age segmented things, especially for the younger children, to allow parents to not have like just everything going on all at once. But we also don't require parents to send their children to anything. Children of any age are welcome at any time in this service. And honestly, if children want to be in Sunday school too, that is also totally fine. Now, obviously in Sunday school, for those that don't know, our age breakouts for Sunday school, we actually have the children downstairs for Sunday school until like junior high, essentially. Because we've purposely in our church structured Sunday school where it's more academic. It's kind of more like a college curriculum where we work through different stuff. It's kind of more at a high level. Some of the stuff we go over is fairly controversial, like Christian ethics and stuff like that. So a bit up to the parent discretion if you want your kid in that. Totally up to you, though. Children are welcome in any environment. Part of the reason for that is, again, going back to the state of the family in America, families spend enough time separated in our current culture. We want this to be a place where families are together as much as possible and as much as feasible. Because just think about the stereotypical week for an American. Kids are in school for 40 hours a week in extracurricular activities, maybe in post-school daycare. There's sports stuff going on all the time. And then you come to church and it's just more segmentation. To effectively where you maybe have a few hours, if that, with your child throughout the week. And we would just argue it's very hard for you to be fulfilling the biblical picture of what it means to be a parent who is actively involved in the spiritual nurturing of your child. And you, as a parent, are called to be the primary spiritual leader in your child's life. If you spend so little time with your child that you don't even really know what they're doing, especially if you're in a church where, like, you have no idea what your child is learning, there's no kind of check-in or anything like that. I mean, there are some churches where it's like you effectively go to separate churches. Like, there's even different buildings at times. And I'm not saying that that's inherently bad. It can be done very well. There are a lot of strengths that can be present there. But we purposefully try to be a place that brings families together. And then as far as the equipping goes, part of our equipping too is that the purpose of even our younger children's ministries is to prepare them to be in the bigger, big people church or whatever. I think that's the word we use with Blakely. Because we, even in the younger ministries, we're striving to push children to be ready to be with adults. If you've read anything about the dropout statistics of children in church, last year we did a month-long block, and that was one of my key reasons for doing that block, is just kind of working through what we do as a church about that and why we've structured our church the way we have. To sum it up, the church is losing the majority of children that are in the church. By the time they become young adults, most children are not staying in church. That trend's been there for a while, and there's a very good poll done a while ago that asked a bunch of these young adults why. One of the biggest reasons was that to them, church was not real. It was not a place of answers. It was not a place of involvement, and it was not a place of meaning. And a big part of that, in their own admission, was that church had become shallow. It had become entertainment-driven. It had become so segmented that, like, they just felt like they were kind of this cog in the wheel that was kind of just pushed along through all the different activities. And again, I'm not, like, don't hear me say that activities inherently are bad. It's a trend that we've been seeing these last few decades where kids feel the difference of being involved with their parents and their family and with other adults as opposed to being sequestered off to their own group. And we strive to be a church that brings families and generations and the whole church together so that we can learn and grow together. And what better way to know what your children are learning and to talk through things together than having your child with you as much as possible? And yes, we're very aware of the fact that sometimes we have kids in here too early and that there's stuff that goes way over their head. Talk about it. If what we say up here, we didn't have time to break it down where it's fully understandable to every single age level, you as the parents take the time to do that. So that's kind of a breakdown of our model. And then I want to talk a little bit more about, again, the why of why we do that. Because we are very aware of the fact that our church model is not normal. In fact, we've had a lot of people visit to the church, and basically they show up, you don't have children's ministry, you don't have like XXXXX for all the different ages. All right, bye, I'm going to go to a different church. Again, not inherently bad, and I'm not saying that these people are like just bad Christians and looking for like just a kind of your stereotypical church. Like, it's a choice, is what I'm saying. It's a choice that we are different, we know we're different, and there is reasoning and thinking behind it that Caleb and I and others have put a lot of thought and work into. A big part of the reason goes back to that study I mentioned earlier, and there was a church, and currently is still kind of working through the ramifications of its own study. There's a church that was essentially the flagship of church of kind of the programmatic segmented church movement, and they did a giant study to see how effective their programs were. And what they found, to their own surprise, is that involvement in church programs and working through all the different activities and different things like that barely moved people on the needle of spiritual growth, of actual spiritual growth. Now, they were involved in church, but what they found was that church involvement did not necessarily mean Christian spiritual maturation. And what they found is that what really did move the needle was personal spiritual disciplines. And that's why we, after that month of talking about spiritual family and talking through these things, our next Sunday school block was Personal Spiritual Disciplines, a book by Donald Whitney, which I highly recommend if you haven't read it, or if you have read it, reread it. It's fantastic. What they found is that getting people in the Word consistently, thoughtfully, reflectively, and applicationally, and getting people to pray consistently, passionately, and deeply moved the spiritual needle farther than any program that their church offered. So we strive to be a place that, though we do have programs at times, those are not our focus. Our focus is to push everyone here to be in the Word more, and praying more, and growing. And one of the best ways to do that is to be together, thinking through things together. That's why we purposely have a fairly simplified calendar. There are not many events going on. We kind of have the theory that less is more. That as we work through things together, we can work through things more deeply and more thoroughly and apply them better to ourselves, to our families, to each other. And what's also interesting is that the devil knows exactly what he's doing and what he fights in our own spiritual lives. That's why I constantly, especially these last couple years, have been saying that we need to be praying for each other when it comes to our prayer life, comes to our Bible reading, our devotions, how often we're in the Word. And we need to realize that we are in a spiritual war. That Satan is trying to keep us away from these things. And also on the subject of the family in general, we need to be in prayer for American and world families. I think Satan is at war against the family. And we're seeing that in its many ramifications every day. So how can the church help? The church can help by equipping and encouraging people to practice the spiritual disciplines and to provide a clear goal of becoming a disciple of Christ. That is why our mission statement is so simple. Love God, love others, make disciples. That is the core of what we're called to. We're not trying to make it complicated. We're not trying to be fancy or showy. That is what we are called to as Christians. And also we realize, as part of this, that true spiritual growth, honestly, mostly happens outside of the church. Through your own spiritual disciplines, through the time you spend in the Word and in prayer, and through the time you spend living and actually doing the things that you learn in the Word. It's kind of like the whole Christian college example. It's like it's really easy to be a strong Christian in a Christian college where you're surrounded by a bunch of Christians. It's kind of the same thing at church sometimes. If you're involved in a bunch of church activities, it's really easy to be a good Christian and be super involved until you hit the real world. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm not surrounded by Christians anymore. This isn't easy. This next section here, again, I want you to not hear that I am totally bashing on programs. But what the study found and what has been becoming more common knowledge these last couple decades specifically is that programs themselves do not necessarily work for spiritual growth. Right practice cannot create a right heart. Said another way, good theology leads to good practice, not the other way around. Doing things for Christ does not make one a disciple of Christ. In fact, doing too many things for Christ can often cause one to become overburdened and kind of run away from Christ. If the church has too many programs and curriculum being taught at once, the result is often a shallow understanding of many things without a deep understanding of anything. And that is not what we long for in this church. That is why, again, we purposely are fairly simple and few with our activities. It is not uncommon at all to ask somebody, specifically here in America, how they are doing and get the answer, busy. In fact, it is almost a badge of honor worn by many that we are busy. And we recognize this. I know that pretty much to a person, we are busy. And we don't want church to be a place that just increases the busyness. We want this to be a place of rest and healing and togetherness. And we realize that if we are a place that basically just makes you too busy. We're trying to manufacture something that we're not giving you the time for. A program will never create the results that personal spiritual disciplines will create. Churches have relied heavily on programs for the last few decades and have done well to raise involvement. But one of the major things, one of the most surprising and discouraging things that the study found is that in this church, and they extended it to other churches as well, so I'm not even bashing on this one specific churches, it's just the trend of church in general, is that only 1 in 5 congregants read their Bible and pray daily. In fact, you can poll pastors, and they did. Not even every single pastor. In fact, honestly, if I remember correctly, it was a minority of pastors read their Bible and pray every day. There is a spiritual war. Increased church participation will never change hearts and lives like increased personal communion with God. So what then does our model look like? Church events and services are done with everyone together as much as possible. We will do and have done gender-focused events and studies, but our goal is to keep the biological and church family together as much as possible. As God blesses with growth, you may see more and more activities, but we will be very selective and very careful with how we include these activities. Even what is done separately is purposefully interwoven whenever possible into various groups. What children learn in Sunday school and children's church is given to parents as weekly follow-up opportunities. Our children's program seeks to train children to be prepared, as I said earlier, to be with everybody in the combined services. And when we have men's and women's events, we are doing these for the purpose of building family and multi-generational relationships within the church to encourage multi-generational mentorship. In other words, as we have events, we're going to try purposely to have all ages together for these events. Whether it's a gendered event, we have all the ladies, whatever age, together. And again, our church calendar is purposely simple. Because in our culture, we are busy enough. We're not seeking to overburden you. Rather, we seek to make few activities that are purposeful and effective as possible so that we have time to practice what we are learning in our families and in our world. Why did we choose this model? The first thing, one of the main reasons, is that we recognize that the church can never replace what ought to be happening during the week. The church simply ought to be a springboard for what is done throughout the week. It ought to equip its members to be pushing themselves towards Christ-likeness every day. The church, specifically, getting back to our topic of today, the church specifically can never replace the role of the parents. The church and parents must work together. That is why we are family equipping for the purpose of family integrated. If parents are not trained and equipped to be leading their children every day and communicating to them what Christ-likeness is, then the church will have little effect through the small amount of time that it has with each child. In other words, we can't do in 2 hours what you ought to be doing every day, every minute that you have your child. We can help, and we try to help. And I'm not saying like we're just kind of chucking our duty and be like, well, we're not even going to help at all. We're going to do the best we can with the little time we have while recognizing that what we do is not enough. It's not meant to be enough. The church is not meant to be a parent. It's meant to be a place where families and people gather to help each other. The church can also never replace the role of adult mentors. The church should, however, be a place where these relationships start and are encouraged, and the church can never replace the role of daily friendships. Again, these may start at the church, but investing in each other must go beyond formal meetings. The church should never make you too busy to grow in your own spiritual life, but its activities can serve to push you there. Families belong together. That's one of our other main reasons why we chose this model. Both biological and spiritual families, we believe, strongly belong together as much as possible. There's enough brokenness, fragmentation, and compartmentalization in our society. There is enough disconnection between parents and children. Watch any TV show, watch any movie, how are parents portrayed? As basically idiots that are disconnected from their children, have no idea what's going on, and don't know how to lead their children. They're always wrong. You can summarize the vast majority of, as much as I love Disney, you can unfortunately summarize the vast majority of Disney and other movies as basically the parents are wrong, the child figured it out and did the thing, then won the day. Like, that's literally the storyline of so many movies. What we see in Scripture, however, is that parents are the primary ones who are held responsible for the spiritual instruction of their children. The parents are to be leading their family. Therefore, we think it is of vital importance that as much as possible, the family is all learning the same material and able to converse about it throughout the week. This is also why, when the material does differ, we send home materials so that the family can be touching in together and learning the same material even when they have learned different stuff on Sunday. That is also why, as part of having less programs, we purposely strive to make it inherently the case that church is not a break from parenting. And I know I say that, and there's like just a gasp. Like, I need a break. We realize you need a break. That is, again, why we do have some programs, why we haven't scrapped all of the programs. We realize there's a lot of value in giving a break when it's needed. But what we don't want to create is a culture where coming here inherently means that I don't have to parent or lead my child. You, as the parent, every single second from the moment your child was conceived, you are the spiritual leader of your child. There is never a moment where that does not primarily fall on you. And we realize that is a heavy burden. That is why we are here to help. And again, I know it sounds cruel that this isn't a place for a break, but church ought to be the place which serves as a springboard towards spiritual growth together as a family, not as a place of just getting time away from each other. Worshiping and learning together can have a profound impact on your family. Your kids of any age catch far more than you realize, far earlier than you think. And the time you spend together in church will foster conversation. And if they don't understand something, give them a chance to ask and talk through it. What also helps is to remember that worship can and should happen in the busyness and normalness of life. We are well aware of the fact that having children in more events and services will create noise and confusion and chaos, and we're okay with that. Because nobody would say this, but too often what happens on a Sunday is that you have to create this pristine environment and then I can worship. That is directly contrary to life. If that's what you need to worship, then you will not ever worship anywhere where your children are not somewhere else. God calls us to worship and glorify Him even when we're eating and drinking. In other words, when we're doing everything. Worship is life. And life is messy. And sometimes Sunday mornings will be messy because we have kids involved here, and that's okay. We want families here. We want everybody to feel welcome. And disruptions and whatever, they're going to happen. But we want everyone to realize that we are called to worship God even in the midst of noise and busyness, because He is the one who can help quiet the noise and the busyness in our heart. And He may not even quiet it at times, because again, life is just busy. Life is noisy. He is the one who helps us, more importantly, to handle it well and to live through it and to worship Him in it. And as a side note, this is a free note, worshiping on Sunday together as a family can become much easier when it is simply a bigger version of something that is already happening at home. A consistent worship time together as a family will help in a worship time on Sunday. Other reasons that we have chosen the model is that the generations need each other. And that we are purposely trying not to be a place of entertainment, but a place of spiritual growth. And then lastly, again, another reason we've chosen our model is that we realize that most spiritual growth in the life of an individual and families happens outside the church. We want to equip families for the spiritual journey that happens primarily outside of these walls. We cannot and should not even try to do in our few hours together what families ought to be doing every day. I know this may not have been the talk that you were expecting about family, but I wanted to do today, specifically in the core value of family, is explain why we broke out family specifically, even though it does technically fall under fellowship and teaching, and also just give some rationale for the model that we've chosen in our church, because we are very well aware of the fact that it is different than what you will find in most churches. But I hope that kind of answered some of the questions about it. There's obviously many more thoughts that I and Caleb and others have about it. And if you want to talk more about it, we are more than willing to talk through any question that you have about it. But what I want to just end real quick with today is just the encouragement to families that wherever you are, we want to be a church that meets you where you are and helps you and equips, nurtures, and develops family members to honor God in whatever role you find yourself. And that we need each other to do that, but most importantly, we need God. And we need to help point you to God and what God calls you to. And remind you that he can give you the strength. No matter how hard where you are is, God can help you through it. Let's pray. Taylor, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for how much you care about families. You know the state of families today. You know that we live in a hurting world, but you are the healer. And I pray that as we look to you, that this church will be a place that encourages and helps all family members, and that we are a place of healing, and we are a place that families will see and learn the beautiful picture that they are called to. I pray this in your name. Amen.